I'm going to be sharing with you the week 23 of our harmony study. And I'm having trouble already. And what we are going to look at is Jesus' trial before Annas, and then he's tried before Caiaphas and the Sanhedrin. And then we're going to look at Peter's denial. Last week, a couple of weeks ago, Jesus predicted that he would deny him three times, and now we're going to look at what he had that came to attrition. Then we're going to view Jesus that was led to Pilate. And then he stands before Pilate for the first time, and then Pilate sends him to Herod, and this Herod is called Antipas. And then finally, in the last one, he returns to Pilate, and he condemns Jesus. So that's the week we're going to cover this week. And it's really interesting when you look at how these Israel people work. They had their own methodology and so forth. I had ran some sheets for everyone on our study tonight. You can mark them up however you want. But I don't think I should have did it black and white. You got the only colored one. I don't know why. But anyway, on the colored one, you... Well, I thought I hit the color button, but I guess I didn't on the computer. But you could mark up how the different versions compare. That's why I gave you these sheets.
When you do this like this, uh-huh. Do you have to cut and paste? Is that how you do this, side by side? Or how do you get that like that?
It's
I'm not a computer genius.
It's a secret.
Oh, okay.
Actually, what I do is on the PowerPoint, I can set up with four different panels.
Oh, okay.
So I click that, and then I rearrange the panels. The two middle panels are the hardest one, because you got to work from the bottom up, and you have to size it, and that's why some of the fonts are different. But the way I structure the PowerPoint is so that you could actually see
right. All
the versions and how they compare.
Right.
And that's what we're going to look at tonight.
And I love it, but I don't have to.
Okay, so with that, let's start off with the first when Jesus is tried before Annas. Can I get someone to read John chapter 18, verses 12 through 14, please?
So the Roman cohort and the commander and the officers of the Jews arrested Jesus and bound him, and led him to Annas first, for he was father-in-law of Caiaphas, who was high priest that year. Now Caiaphas was the one who had advised the Jews that it was expedient for one man to die on behalf of the people.
Okay, so why are there two different sets of officers? One was the Romans, and then the officers of the Jews. Okay, Joel.
Well, because the Romans wanted their guy in, and the Jews, even though he had been put out as far as the head, he was still the head of the Jews to them, even though Rome had wanted somebody different.
That's for the high priest.
Yeah.
Yeah, but why do the Romans have soldiers and the Jews have soldiers, officers?
Well, they had temple guards.
They had the temple guards. That's what I was getting at. And like you said about the high priest, Annas was the high priest, and according to Moses, once you're a high priest, you're a high priest for life. But the Romans changed it because they didn't like this guy, and they wanted his son-in-law in, Caiaphas. And that's why there's two high priests. Now, Caiaphas was one who wanted the death penalty for Jesus. He said, "Come to die for the people." The Jewish trials basically was set up in a threefold manner. One being a preliminary examination, and that was by Annas. The second part of the trial, he was before Caiaphas. He was questioning him. And the third part of the trial is before the high priest, the elders, and the Sanhedrin. That's how they came up with their trial. But their trials couldn't convict anybody. And what did they need to do? Anyone?
Take him to Pontius Pilate. They needed a governor.
They needed to take him to the governor, Pontius Pilate. So, with this, let's read the next section. And then, next, there you go. Okay, in John, go back.
Oh, you had it.
And I'm having difficulties with it. Here it is. Okay, John 18, chapter 18, verses 19 to 23. Can I get a volunteer to read that, please?
I've got that. Excuse me. The high priest then questioned Jesus about his disciples and about his teaching. Jesus answered him, "I have spoken openly to the world. I always taught in the synagogues and the temple, and in the temple where all the Jews come together, and I spoke nothing in secret. Why do you question me? Question those who have heard what I spoke to them. They know what I said." When he had said this, one of the officers standing nearby struck Jesus, saying, "Is that the way you answer the high priest?" Jesus answered him, "If I have spoken wrongly, testify of the wrong. But if rightly, why do you strike me?"
Thank you very much, Sarah. So Jesus was replying to the charges against her. And he said, "I didn't do anything wrong. I spoke the truth. And if you want to find out about what the people said or what the people heard, ask them."
Yes, yeah.
You know, they just, and this is a, as far as I'm concerned, this is like a kangaroo court. They already had it in their minds that they were going to crucify Jesus. And that was the plan. That was God's plan, that he should die for forgiveness of sins for all mankind. And it's interesting, when this officer of the court, or one of the temple guards, struck him, he said, "Hey, you're not being respectful to the high priest." Well, Jesus said, "If I've done something wrong, so be it. But I have. So why did you strike me?" He didn't have the authority to strike Jesus. You could already see the tension building up with these individuals, because Jesus was turning the world upside down, and it was basically rocking their world. And we are going to see that Annas said, "Well, look, now we'll send him to the high priest, Caiaphas, his son-in-law, and let's have him examined." Carol.
Yeah, I think this is interesting that this temple guard took action, because, you know, when they sent the temple guards down to get Jesus when he was preaching in the temple, they were so, the ones who went were so impressed by him, they just couldn't arrest him. So here's a temple guard overcompensating, I think, for the fact that they'd probably been chewed out because they didn't do what they were supposed to do the time before.
In the first place, yeah. That's a good observation. Anybody else? Anybody on Zoom have anything to add?
If you put this in perspective and looking back at the situation back in those days, the area of Judea was constantly in turmoil with conspiracies. The Jews hated the Romans. They had a history prior to Jesus was coming, back in the area where the Bible was silent. They had all of these men that came up, caused chaos, and were eventually killed, and another would rise up. And so here's Jesus, and he's saying, well, I didn't do any of this secretly. I didn't conspire. I didn't go behind their back. I spoke openly. And that's why he said, well, why do you strike me? I didn't say it in secret.
Yeah.
I did it openly.
And you could see the tension building up. The week before, Jesus came into Jerusalem. And what did all the people do?
They were praising him.
They praised him. They honored him as king. And that must have ruffled the feathers of these people in authority, of the Jewish authority. So now he's going to Caiaphas. And let me get that up next. And in Caiaphas, there's basically four gospel writers writing about that. Can I get someone to read Matthew chapter 26, verses 57 and 58, please?
Those who had seized Jesus led him away to Caiaphas, the high priest, where the scribes and the elders were gathered together. But Peter was following him at a distance, as far as the courtyard of the high priest, and entered in and sat down with the officers to see the outcome.
Thank you very much, Di. So in Mark's account, in Mark's account, he writes in 14th chapter, verse 53, they led Jesus away to the high priest, and all the chief priests and the elders and the scribes were gathered together. Similar to Matthew's account, they took him to the high priest. Matthew identifies the high priest as Caiaphas, whereas Mark doesn't. And in Luke's account, I'll get this right here, Luke writes, having arrested him, they led him away and brought him to the house of the high priest. But Peter was following at a distance. So we see that in both Luke's account and Matthew's account, we see that both gospel writers identify Peter as trailing or being part of listening to what was being said about Jesus. He was in the background, didn't say anything. In John's account, I messed it up. Let me try to minimize this thing here. In John's account, he just says that, so Annas said, sent him bound to Caiaphas, the high priest. And that's all he says. So when you put them together, you could actually see on this slide that all four Gospels identify that Annas sent him to the high priest. And only Matthew identifies the high priest as Caiaphas. And again, if you want to circle him and do whatever on your thing, I apologize for not giving you the colored slides, you could actually see what's, how I did this. And only two of the writers identified Peter being there. Why is that important? That Peter was there.
Because it was prophesied that he would deny his Christ.
Exactly. Because just remember a couple of weeks ago, we talked about Jesus told him, before the crow cocks, you will deny me three times. And Peter's there throughout this process. And when we look at the denial, we'll see that Jesus's sayings come through attrition, and Peter denies them. And Peter weeps bitterly, because he knew when the Lord looked at him what was said. Okay, now he's at the high priest, and now the Sanhedrin come in. And let me get the next one. So can I get a volunteer to read Matthew chapter 26, verses 59 through 60, please?
Just 59 and 60?
59 through 68, I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. Now the chief priests and the whole council kept trying to obtain false testimony against Jesus so they might put him to death. They did not find any, even though many false witnesses came forward. But later on, two came forward and said, "This man stated, 'I am able to destroy the temple of God and to rebuild it in 3 days.'" The high priest stood up and said to him, "Do you not answer? What is it that these men are testifying against you?" But Jesus kept silent, and the high priest said to him, "I adjure you by the living God that you tell us whether you are the Christ, the Son of God." Jesus said to him, "You have said it yourself. Nevertheless, I tell you, hereafter, you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of power and coming on the clouds of heaven." And the high priest tore his robes and said, "He was blaspheming. What further need do we have of witnesses? Behold, you have now heard the blasphemy. What do you think?" They answered, "He deserves death." And they spat in his face and beat him with their fists, and others slapped him and said, "Prophesy to us, you Christ, who is the one who hit you?"
Thank you. So the other two gospel writers, Mark and Luke, they share the same account, and there are some consistencies in the account. If you look at Mark's account, he says in verse 56, "For many were given false testimony against him, but their testimony wasn't consistent," in verse 56 of Mark chapter 14. But when you look at Matthew's account, he says essentially the same thing, but he also adds that there were two false witnesses that came forward. And in Luke's account, he said that he doesn't even mention the false testimonies against Jesus. He just goes into the account that they blindfolded him and they were beating on him. What are the two questions did the high priest ask Jesus?
Lord, you know if he was the Son of God.
Are you the Christ? Are you the Son of God? So those are the two questions that the high priest asked Jesus. And why did he ask him that? Go ahead, Bill.
Because their mind was set that he was not, and they wanted him to blaspheme in their eyes.
Exactly. They wanted Jesus to blaspheme, to say, "Look, I'm God. And they're going to say, you're just a man. And we have to realize that Jesus was both God and man. And these people refused to accept that. And I have next slide. It goes on to show that Matthew says in verse 67 and 68, they spat in his face. And they beat him with their fists, and others slapped him, and said, prophesy to us, you Christ, who is the one who hit you? Again, go back to Luke's account, they blindfolded him. Matthew doesn't say that. Bill, you know?
Yeah. When Caiaphas prophesied that it was expedient that one man should die, that was the truth. But it was different than he meant it. But earlier in the gospel, who was it that advised to leave him alone lest they be withstanding God?
Nicodemus.
Mm-hmm.
Who was that?
Nicodemus.
Okay. Yeah. And we're going to see when you look at secular history, when the Sanhedrin get together, there were some people that didn't want Jesus to die.
Yeah.
One in particular was Joseph. I can't even
say.
There you go. He didn't want. He said, "Hey, we should not kill this guy." And when Gamaliel years later said that maybe this is just a fad that's going to die out, this Jesus' teaching. Let it play out. Don't get so upset that it may cost you your life, because if he's of God, you are fighting against God.
Yeah.
You know, and that's something we as Christians should remember. When we go out in the world and encounter different people, they all have their own ideas. They all have their own, and where they get their ideas, I don't know. But yet we have to deal with them in a loving fashion, because God created all people, and we are his servants to share his message to the best of our ability. Yes, Carol.
Do I remember that somebody once taught that you had to have witnesses against somebody? You couldn't say that they were guilty just on their own testimony?
Yes. You have to have two or three witnesses. And that's why they were asking people to come forward. Hey, what did you hear about this guy? And nobody could actually be consistent saying, this is what we heard. He's a false teacher. And that's, even today, you have to have witnesses. And even in our judicial system, we have to have witnesses. Okay, now we see that he's before the Sanhedrin. He's before Caiaphas. And we see an insert here of Peter's denial. And put that. And that's found in all four gospel accounts. And I have them all up there. And if I could get someone to read Mark chapter 14, verses 66 to 72, and we'll use this as our primary reading in this section.
As Peter was below in the courtyard, one of the servant girls of the high priest came, and seeing Peter warming himself, she looked at him and said, "You also were with Jesus the Nazarene." But he denied it, saying, "I neither know nor understand what you are talking about." And he went out onto the porch. The servant girl saw him and began once more to say to the bystanders, "This is one of them." But again he denied it, and after a little while the bystanders were again saying to Peter, "Surely you are one of them, for you are Galilean too." But he began to curse and swear, "I do not know this man you are talking about." Immediately a rooster crowed a second time, and Peter remembered how Jesus had made the remark to him, "Before a rooster crows twice, you will deny me three times." And he began to weep.
Thank you. So we see that he vehemently denied being with Jesus. And in John's account, there's only three verses. And he says, "Now Simon Peter was standing and warming himself. So they said to him, 'You are not also one of his disciples, are you?' And he denied it. And said, 'I am not.' One of the slaves of the high priest, being a relative of the one whose ear Peter cut off, said, 'Did I not see you in the garden with him?' And Peter then denied it again, and immediately the rooster crowed." So in order to get the full picture, we have to look at all four gospel accounts. We look at Matthew's account, and we see that in verse 69, there was a servant girl that identified Jesus. Same as Mark and Luke, a servant girl. But in John's account, we see that one of the slaves of the high priest, whose cousin Peter cut his ear off, recognized Peter. Didn't talk about servant girls. It is interesting when you look at these accounts, Peter was there. What do you think he was trying to do when he followed Jesus to the high priest and listened to what was saying? And now when they're beating Jesus, he's there. And he's denying him. So why do you think Peter was there?
Well, he always wanted to. He always was the one that spoke up and said, "I want to be like you. I want to be, you know." So I don't know. Maybe he just felt that he needed to be there.
He wanted to protect Jesus, but what was Jesus doing?
Protecting him, surrendering.
Protecting him. And why?
Because that was his job as a servant. Too.
Go ahead. Because it says in there that it would be fulfilled that he would not lose one of them, or not one of them would be harmed.
Right, exactly.
However, I can't quote it verbatim, obviously.
But when you think about what's happening, he was there and he was listening, and all of a sudden his stripes changed from being gun-ho to protect Jesus, and all of a sudden, hey, I don't know that guy.
He was scared.
Yeah. Do we do that today?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely. Sure. Each and every one of us will do that. Bill.
I think Peter had to see how weak he was in order to become the rock that Jesus said he would be.
That's a good point. But when you look at Peter's life,
Peter wasn't the rock.
He was going to become the
no,
rock.
No, his statement that Jesus is the Christ and that the Son of God, that's the rock. Not Jesus, not Peter.
Peter's name is Cephas, which is a name for a stone, not a pebble, but not the bedrock, which is what the
gospel
his word was,
right?
Jesus is.
But when you look at Peter, even afterwards, we go to the 15th chapter of Acts, we see that he didn't squish the false teachers about circumcision. Paul had to go down there and confront him. And he did. Even though Peter was sent to Cornelius' house by God, he did what the Lord said. He didn't like it, but he did it. And we see throughout Peter's life, he's like us. He's human. He makes mistakes.
Yeah, he's, you recall Paul went to him and confronted him.
Absolutely.
About circumcision. Not wanting to eat with Gentiles in front of other Jewish people.
And you know, you go to Paul's third missionary journey, and this always sticks in the back of my mind. He was en route to go back to Jerusalem, but he had to go meet with some of the brethren. And those brethren were Jewish Christians. And what were they doing? Why was it so important for Paul to be with those individuals?
Teaching circumcision.
No, I'm talking about on his third missionary journey. He was traveling and he wanted to make it back to Troas. Why was it so important for Paul to meet with them?
We knew it would be his last opportunity.
Yeah.
So they could take the Lord's Supper with him?
No, because of Passover. He was recognizing the Passover, but when you look at Paul's life, he didn't pass that on Christians. That was his tie to the Jewish community. And he respected them for that, and he wanted to participate in the Passover with them.
That was a Jewish tradition for 1500 years.
Exactly. But he didn't pass that tradition on to other Christians. What my point is, he was pure, and I have traditions in my life, and I don't pass it on to other individuals. That's my tradition, my family traditions. But that's what Paul was doing. We each have different traditions in our lives, but that's not tying those traditions onto Christians. What ties us together is the gospel. And Peter learned a lesson. He learned his lesson because he denied Jesus, and Jesus told him he was going to do that. Carol.
Yeah, I think you see in Peter how he thought he was strong. And he was, as you say, was going to protect Jesus by cutting off the ear, even though Jesus didn't tell him. Then he's shaken to his core, and like the rest of them, all run away. But he still thinks he's strong, so he still thinks he can do something himself. Not with God, but he thinks he himself can do something. And that's why he goes, and then he gets in the middle of that, and he sees I'm in trouble here. And he just, you know, lies his way through it and swears and to try and validate. And then Jesus does gives him his little come ups. Like, I told you three times. And then Jesus makes sure that he tells him that it's all right. I knew this was going to happen. I have faith in you still. And Lee's book, she pointed out to me that it's not just three times that Peter denies, because the three denials are in Matthew, but the fourth time is over here in John, when the slave, and that's the fourth time he denies. So before the cock crows, he denied three times, and he still denied another time.
Fourth time.
And when you think about it, that's a lesson for us. You know, there's something that we have to always stand for Christ. And we shouldn't let little things come in and have Satan control our lives. Very good discussion. Now we're going to see that the Sanhedrin already said, look, this guy blasphemed. He said he's God. Now let's take care of him. Let's have the Roman governor meet with him and decide his death penalty. And he goes to Pilate now, and again, in four accounts, we read in Matthew chapter 27, verses 1 and 2. Now, when morning came, all the chief priests and the elders of the people conferred together against Jesus to put him to death. And they bound him and led him away and delivered him to Pilate. We see that same scenario in Mark. And Luke says in chapter 23, verse 1, then the whole body of them got up and brought him before Pilate. So they all brought him up. And someone read John 18, verses 28 and 29, please.
And then they led Jesus from Caiaphas to the Praetorium. And it was early, and they themselves did not enter into the Praetorium, so that they would not be defiled, but that they might eat the Passover. Therefore Pilate went out to them and said, what accusation do you have to bring against this man?
Thank you. So the council of elders and the chief priests, the high priest, they couldn't do anything. So they said, well, let's send him to Pilate. Let him make a decision. Now Pilate's going to examine Jesus. And that's found again in the four accounts. In Matthew chapter 27, verses 11 through 14. Mark chapter 15, verses 2 through 5. Luke chapter 23, verses 2 to 3. And John chapter 18, verses 28 through 38. Can I get someone to read John 18, verses 28 through 38, please?
Then they led Jesus from
Caiaphas.
Caiaphas. Into the
Praetorium.
And it was early, and they themselves did not enter into the Praetorium. So that they would not be defiled, but might eat the Passover. Therefore Pilate went out to them and said, what accusations do you bring against this man? They answered and said to him, if this man were not an evildoer, we would not have delivered him to you. So Pilate said to them, take him yourselves and judge him according to your law. The Jews said to him, we are not permitted to put anyone to death. To fulfill the word of Jesus, which he spoke, signifying by what kind of death he was about to die. Therefore, Pilate entered again into the Praetorium and summoned Jesus and said to him, are you the king of the Jews?
Just go down to the next.
Okay. Jesus answered, are you saying this on your own initiative, or did others tell you about me? Pilate answered, I am not a Jew. Am I your own nation, and the chief priest delivered you to me? What have you done? Jesus answered, my kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were, or this would then, my servants would be fighting, so that I would not be
handed over to the Jews, but was it as it is, my kingdom is not of this realm. Therefore, Pilate said to him, so you are a king. Jesus answered, you say correctly that I am a king. For this I have been born, and for this I have come to the world to testify to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice. Pilate said to him, what is truth? And when he had said this, he went out again to the Jews and said to them, I find no guilt in him.
Thank you, Frank. So we see that with the trial from the Jews, they came up with, he blasphemed. And Pilate said, hey, that's not worthy of death, blaspheming. That's your religion. You guys take care of it. And what they conjured up in their minds, well, he claims to be a king. And that's going to be a problem to Caesar. And why?
You already got a king. Why do they need another one?
There you go. And all of a sudden, this Pilate sees through these lies and said, hey, you go take care of your own business. Why was Pilate there anyway? Why was he in Jerusalem?
Part of the house.
He wasn't a Jew, he said.
No, he wasn't a Jew. He was there to watch out for things who were in control.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And we see that he said, you guys take care of it. Take care of this problem. This is not a government problem. And this man does not deserve to die. So as Jesus was talking, Pilate learns that he's from Galilee. And who's the head of the Galilee?
Herod.
Herod. Herod. Antipas. I did a study on all the Herods, and believe me, you need a road map to see who's who. But when you look at this, he was in charge of that area. And again, he was down there, and why?
Same thing.
Because
it was passive, there were a lot of people.
Yeah, and they wanted to make sure everything was in control. And that brings us to Jesus before Herod. And the only account that Jesus is before Herod is found in Luke chapter 23, verses 6 through 9. And Luke goes on to say, when Pilate heard this, he asked whether this man was a Galilean. And when he had learned that he belonged to Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him to Herod, who himself also was in Jerusalem at that time. Now Herod was very glad to see Jesus, for he wanted to see him for a long time, because he had been hearing about him and was hoping to see some sign performed by him. He wanted to be entertained, because he heard of all the miracles that Jesus was doing. Maybe he'll do one for me, one of these trips. He questioned him at some length, but he answered him nothing. Jesus was silent. Why do you think that was?
It was prophesied.
It was prophesied by who?
I can't answer that.
Isaiah chapter 53, verse 7. He was silent. And he stayed, and he was. So the Jews had all this scripture. They had all these prophets, their writings, and they didn't put the two together. we're very fortunate we have the Bible to look at and to compare. So that's something we as Christians should do, is search out the scriptures and see what God's word is. And it's important to do that. Okay, in verse 10, and the chief priests and the scribes were standing there accusing him vehemently. So they were upset. They didn't want this guy to live because Jesus was turning the world upside down and turning people away from these individuals. And Herod, with his soldiers, after treating him with contempt and mocking him, dressed him in a gorgeous robe and sent him back to Pilate. Again, Herod wanted no part of this. He said, let Pilate deal with this thing. He's the head of the region. And he'll put an end to this. Now Herod and Pilate became friends with one another that very day, or before they have been enemies with each other.
Strange bedfellows.
I guess. So he sent it back to Pilate, which brings us to our last section in this week. Pilate condemns Jesus. Can I get someone to read? This is a long reading. Matthew chapter 27, verses 15 through 33.
Now, the feast, the governor was accustomed to release for the people one, any one prisoner whom they wanted. At that time, they were holding a notorious prisoner called Barabbas. So when the people gathered together, Pilate said to them, whom do you want me to release for you? Barabbas, or Jesus, who is called Christ. For he knew that because of envy they had handed him over. While he was sitting on the judgment seat, his wife sent a message saying, have nothing to do with that righteous man, for last night I suffered greatly in a dream because of him. But the chief priests and the elders persuaded the crowds to ask for Barabbas and put Jesus to death. But the governor said to them, which of the two do you want me to release for you? And they said, Barabbas. Pilate said to them, then what shall I do with Jesus, who is called Christ? They all said, crucify him. And he said, why? What evil has he done? But they kept shouting all the more, saying, crucify him. Then Pilate saw that he was accomplishing nothing, but rather that a riot was starting. He took water and washed his hands in front of the crowd, saying, I am innocent of this man's blood. See to that yourselves. And all the people said, his blood shall be on us and on our children. Then he released Barabbas for them, but after having Jesus scourged, he handed him over to be crucified.
Thank you, guys. So we see in this reading, of all the gospel accounts, they all mention Barabbas. And why was Pilate going to release a prisoner?
Custom on Jews over Basil.
And they picked the worst to release, Barabbas. And instead of picking Jesus to be released, they picked this thief, murderer, and whatever else he did to be again with them. And Pilate said in this particular case, I'm going to wash my hands of this incident. I don't want any part of this. But yet, he condemned Jesus to death. He asked, what do you want to do with Jesus? And he said, crucify him. He doesn't want it to be part of the crucifixion, but yet he was. And it's interesting when you read this, all accounts, something must have been in the back of his mind about Jesus.
He didn't listen to his wife either.
No. His wife had something to say about it. Hey, don't have anything to do with this man. Carol.
Yeah, but he's going to get in trouble if they riot.
They're showing that they're going to riot. He can't do anything. He already set this up to try and get out of it. And it would be like he brought out Jeffrey Dahmer's and said, do you want this man who eats people, or do you want, or do you want this person who hasn't done anything? And when they were so convicted that they would take and release this person who was so harmful to their society back in, he's really realizing the crowd's in control, I'm not in control, and it doesn't matter that he washes his hands of it, it's still his decision, but he was forced into it.
Oh, absolutely.
But he had to do something to involve him.
Sharon.
Verse 25 is kind of interesting to me, because the and all the people said, his blood shall be on us and on our children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Israel is, they've had trouble forever. You know, I wonder if that's a little bit of a forecast. You know?
When you look at the history of Israel, they've been like this since day one.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the brothers,
yeah,
put Joseph in the well, and then they pull them out. We'll sell them. That was God's plan.
What, I've forgotten where it was, but says your name will be a hiss and a byword.
Yeah.
Talking about the Jews.
Yeah.
And it's always been a hiss and a byword. Mm-hmm. Give me that back, you Jew. You ever heard that? Don't say that anymore, but we'll move it there.
We can't even call the plant the Jew. We can't call the Jew plant anymore.
Yeah.
It's just a what?
So, you know, it wasn't. Just in the white world.
I had dealings with some of these so-called Jews in New York. And I won't repeat what happened. But it was pretty interesting as far as their attitude towards society, their attitude towards people who aren't Jews.
Really?
It's really interesting. And they're not even Jews. Because all Jewish people cannot trace their lineage back.
They can't prove it.
But yet they claim to be Jewish people. Mm-hmm. And when you look at their history from day one, they were very rebellious. Even when God had told them, I promised Abraham he would receive his blood. Here it is. It's yours for the conquering. But to kill everyone in the land, their cattle, their animals and everything. And what did they do? They didn't do that. So they were rebellious from the time they were a nation. And now we see that Jesus is on trial for his life. And like you said, have his blood on us and our children to come.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. Carol.
Well, I think your point about being able to prove who they are, there's one ad on ancestry.gov where they say, I thought I was Italian, and I found out I was Yugoslavian. it's like, oh, well, this is what the family decided.
Well, you know, the Mormons think that the American Indians are the lost 10 tribes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I know I could trace my lineage back to 1500s, and that's when all the records were destroyed in a fire, prior records. But I'm Italian. Okay, that's all I have. Does anybody else want to add something? I hope these sheets help out. On those on Zoom, I'll send these out via email so you get a copy of this.
Thank you.
Could you have pictures up now?
Okay, if there's nothing else.